This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special Blood Red Podcast with me, Joe Rimmer, joined today by Paul Gorse for something a little bit different, I think. New for 2024, we're doing a bit of a top 10 video, and we're making some big predictions for the year ahead. So, we're going to be big, we're going to be bold, we're live. So if you've got a question, if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, fire a question into the comments and our producer Ian will drop it in the chat for me, and we'll try our best to answer it. But we're going to crack on with our top 10 things will definitely, in brackets maybe, happen in 2024.
Not a prediction, it's a spoiler.
Who's that?
I think it's Paul Heyman.
Yeah, I like that. Great. So am I the Brock Lesnar?
You're the Roman Reigns.
I'm sorry, I'm not as up with it. Right, well, we'll start with, I think, quite an easy one for 2024, personally. A big, shiny new contract, 5 years, big money for Trent Alexander-Arnold.
It's interesting, isn't it, this one? I think he was part of a slew of new deals in 2021. You know, Alisson, Van Dijk, Fabinho, Robertson, Henderson eventually, and him. And you look at it now, 25, coming into his prime years, the vice-captain, had an absolutely sensational couple of months, brilliant season overall, one of Liverpool's leading lights, homegrown, boy from West Derby. Can't speak highly enough of him for all that type of stuff.
What you obviously see him a lot more. What's he like behind the scenes? I mean, it feels like he's really growing in character.
Yeah, it seems to me like the additional responsibility has brought out a new level in him, a new sort of air of authority about him. He knows he's a brilliant player, but also he's becoming a real leader in the squad now as well. Obviously, Van Dijk is still the main man for all that type of stuff, but he is on the leadership committee or group or however you want to call it, and they do have kind of sit downs with the manager, and it's never really for big major things what we're led to believe. It's just sort of like, you know, the lads have asked and you come in a couple of hours late on Christmas Day, or can we have Monday off, or you know, little things like that.
There's little things that make the big difference, aren't they?
I think just to keep the squad happy, bit of give and take with the coaching staff and for Klopp, and his voice is a massively influential one. You look at it now and you're thinking, you just hope Liverpool don't take all that for granted. You know, the fact that he is a homegrown lad and he always wants to be the Liverpool captain eventually and all that stuff. You know, because for me, there's a little bit of similarities with Steven Gerrard back in 2005, was it? Where,
after they won the Champions
League. You know, if you listen to what Gerrard has said and what he's written in his book, Liverpool sort of rested on the laurels and just expected Gerrard to be there. And you hope that isn't the same with Alexander-Arnold. I haven't heard anything at the moment in terms of what might happen with a new contract. A few months ago, it was kind of, you know, I think someone reported it, and, you know, someone said, well, that's not necessarily us, but it was like, you know, there's no kind of suggestion that that's in the pipeline at the moment. So that's maybe a little bit wider the mark, as they say. But Liverpool are going to have to do something, aren't they?
I mean, he's got a year left from the summer, hasn't he?
Yeah, and then that's when you do start getting a little bit twitchy and thinking, well, teams going to be looking at him, and whether it's Real Madrid or... You do question who could afford him, given the age, the quality of the player and all that type of stuff. But there will be people or clubs who will be looking. So I just hope Liverpool don't take it for granted and do kind of tie it down sooner rather than later. But certainly this will be one that Liverpool will look to do this year.
Yeah, they tend to do us like a spate of contracts, don't they, at the same time. I remember, was it maybe 2019 or 2021 when it felt like they did like Firmino, then Salah, then Mane. And I think this summer could be one of them. Okay, that's Trent, new contract. pretty confident in that one. Also pretty confident in number two, which is that Liverpool will add to their trophy cabinet over the next 12 months.
Yeah, well, we're recording this, aren't we, on the eve of the Carabao Cup semi-final with Fulham. Yeah. Without being too disrespectful to Fulham, I think that's a fairly kind draw for Liverpool. I think if they're at it for the two games, then they'll book themselves a place at Wembley against, is it Middlesbrough or Chelsea?
Yep.
You'd fancy another showdown with Chelsea, wouldn't you, for the third Cup final in 2 years.
Yep.
And given that Chelsea haven't been in great form as well, you'd make Liverpool firm favourites for that tournament overall. So,
I prefer Middlesbrough, though. I just prefer Middlesbrough, yeah. Give us a bye. Don't mind.
Yeah. I can't be bad with another 0-0 against Chelsea. No. Taking it to penalties.
Kelleher scoring the winner.
There is that. And then Liverpool favourites for the Europa League, or one of the firm favourites for that into the last 16, which resumes in March. I'd love to see Liverpool win that Europa League. It's the one that they haven't won under Klopp. Okay, it's not the Champions League, of course, but they're in there. So why not go and win it? And then the FA Cup, the draw has put them with Bristol Rovers or
Norwich. It's really opened it up, hasn't it?
Yeah. At the same time, when Man City got Tottenham away, and Chelsea got the Villa. Villa. And then I think there was another All Premier League tie in there as well. So, it has slightly opened up for Liverpool. And I think that still represents the kind of fourth in the list of priorities. Yeah. But why not just go for everything and see what you end up with? Yeah. It's you know, looking at first week of January, you're looking at it now thinking there's so many things to keep Liverpool fans excited and tuned in for the next 3, 4, 5 months. So yeah, things are optimistic.
Yeah, it's going to be busy. I probably should have put Liverpool to add more than one trophy to the cabinet, because I actually feel quite confident. I think in Europe, you know, Liverpool, they're not just the best team, but they have the best weapon in Europe, which is Anfield. And no team will want to come to Anfield over to, you know, for the second leg or the first leg of a tie. And you know, we know Liverpool can blow teams away when they're on form at Anfield. And I'd fancy them to do that as they get to the latter stages of that competition. And then, League Cup. I mean, Chelsea are a bit of a basket case, aren't they? So you don't really know what to expect. And if you do get Chelsea in the final, there is every chance they could put a performance together. But I think from the last time the two sides met, and they'll be meeting quite soon again, won't they, at Anfield, I think Liverpool have grown, whereas Chelsea have, you know, fallen to pieces. You know, at the start of the season, I thought, you know, with what happened in the summer and the transfers and stuff like that, they were sort of scrapping out to see who was going to be a contender. And since then, we found out that Liverpool are a contender and Chelsea really aren't. So
yeah,
I think those two competitions, I'm pretty confident. The FA Cup, well, it's opened up, and if City get knocked out, Liverpool should consider themselves the favourites, depending on draws. And then the Premier League is there.
Small matter of the Premier League,
You know,
the 3-point lead. I mean, it's, who knows how that's going to shape up. And I suppose the interesting thing is this year is it wasn't really anticipated.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just riding the crest of the wave, and whatever happens, happens. And if Liverpool don't win the Premier League, it's no great disappointment or shock, because it certainly wasn't expected at the beginning of the year. But while they're in it, why not just see how they carry on? What I find interesting is the fact that, you know, they've only lost one game in 9 months. Yeah. 31 games, is it? 32 games. That is nearly a full season. That's, that is the form of a team who are good enough to win the league. So we'll see what happens going forward. And maybe those competitions will come into play and will be a factor in certain games. But I just feel that it's opened up slightly for Liverpool, and it's a little bit unexpected, but as Klopp might say, let's go for it.
Yeah, I don't think you don't plan for a title challenge, if that makes sense. A title challenge develops, especially for a club.
Yeah.
And I think it has developed this year, and you look at the other rivals. Well, even if Man City do put a run together, they're definitely not the Man City they were last year, and they're not the Man City I think they were even when Liverpool scrapped it out with them in 2018-19 and 2019-20, and obviously won the title then. So I think it's opened up for them, and if they can keep this form going, you know, they can just keep their noses ahead of City. I still think City will come back, and I think that is the whether they can match City, I don't know, but I definitely think it's opened up, and I definitely think Liverpool fans should be confident and should go into the second half of the season and really believe.
Because, totally agree,
And they should also believe that our third thing, which is and you just won it then. So it's a little bit cheating this, but a big day out in Dublin. I definitely think that is on the cards, which is the Europa League final in the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. And just that, I mean, just what an incredible occasion that would be.
Yeah, it's something that I've thought about a few times, actually, just thinking that, you know, if you can just get through the group stages, which aren't the most glamorous for Liverpool, they played in the winter months against teams who, with respect to Toulouse and Union Saint-Gilloire and Lask, they're not the glamorous European ties of, what was it, 2 years ago, was it, when Liverpool played AC Milan and... who else did you have in the group? Atletico Madrid and who's the other one? Difficult group.
God, I can't remember now. You're asking me to remember things that were more than yesterday. So
but if you can just kind of get through the group stages and ride it out till the kind of early spring, which is what Liverpool have done now, that it's quite a tantalising prospect, isn't it? You know, a big day out in Dublin. Imagine how many supporters are going to be there. You know, already the legions of Irish fans who already live in and around Dublin and Ireland as a whole, congregating to the capital. And then it's an easy one for Liverpool fans to get to, isn't it?
Yeah. They'll have to build a bridge. Honestly, they'll have to build a bridge. Yeah, yeah. Holyhead to Dublin.
You know, whether it's flights or get on the Stena Line or whatever it is. It just promises to be a fantastic, not even day, just, you know, a weekend or week. And I think that has probably sustained fans in the last few months, you know, just kind of thinking of that. Obviously still work to do before they can get there. They've got to navigate to whoever they get in the draws and whatever else. But in terms of the Europa League, I don't think there's anyone who Liverpool look at and you're fearful of. You know, Bayer Leverkusen obviously having a great season. I think Roma are still in there, aren't they? And you've got the teams who've dropped down from the Champions League. But this isn't the same Liverpool as last year. They're a much better team, much more compact, rebuilt midfield, more options in terms of goal scorers. And it's a defence who is very much back to what it was in the last sort of 3 or 4 years. So they do feel like, you know, they should be in the Champions League. They are a Champions League level club team. So when you put them into the Europa League, you'd have to consider them one of the strong favourites.
Definitely, definitely. And I just think, like you say, the tantalising aspect of that type of final should be, you know, it should be everything that people should be going out for, you know.
Now that Man United are kind of rivaling there, that would have been a tough one.
And it would have been a bit dodgy, wouldn't it? Whereas this could just be, you know, if they play a European side there, you know, it's just could be a celebration, couldn't it, really, for Liverpool? You know, as you say, they've got a huge following in Ireland and in Dublin. We know that ourselves. And you know, it would just be incredible to be there.
I think they talk about it in the same way they talk about, you know, Rome or, you know, Madrid or whatever. I think genuinely, obviously it's not the European Cup / Champions League, but I won't make it any less of an enjoyable day out for those who are there.
That's it. And I think people forget, you know, like in the modern day, sort of competing for every trophy and, you know, if you finish second, the season's a failure. I think people forget that football is about moments, it's about emotions, it's about those big events. And, you know, you go back to the Europa League or UEFA Cup as it was then in 2001, you know, Liverpool played the final in Dortmund, an incredible stadium. You ask anyone that was there, and they'll tell you how amazing that occasion was. And it's the same for this. You know, I think you look at that, you know, the type of final, and it's a shame it's not in Croke Park, which is so much bigger, but the type of final would be, you know, imagine the people in the pubs of Dublin. It would be incredible. So I really want to see it happen. We've gotten some questions coming in from Richard Hutchinson on YouTube here. Rich, I'll get to some of them as we go along. He's asking about some defenders, which I think, to be honest, ties into one or two of our points. So I will come to them. So stick with us. Spit Roasted Penguin has asked us a similar question. Will Liverpool look to sign anyone? So we'll come to them. So stick with us and we will do. But the next one is I think the biggest one. And I've put this in there, so you might disagree with me, Paul, but I've put Mohamed Salah announces his Liverpool departure. Now bear with us because there's a bit more to this than perhaps just the headline. But I think, looking at it, I think that Salah will have looked at Saudi Arabia, maybe not realised that isn't really what it's all cracked up to be. Perhaps, you know, this last season we've seen that, you know, the money on offer might be great, but the crowds, the occasion, the teams, you know, it doesn't really seem to be developing perhaps the way that they hoped. I'm not saying it'll go the way that the Chinese league did, but it kind of feels similar at the moment. So I think Salah will probably assess his options and realise staying at Liverpool is the best option. But I don't think Liverpool will necessarily give him a new deal. So I almost think that the club and player might come to a point where they say, you know what, you've got a year left from this summer. It's a big contract. Everyone's happy. Scoring goals. You're a big part of what we do. Let's just see out that deal. I don't see Liverpool wanting to give him another deal, because I think then you're getting into his mid to late 30s with a big contract. That just doesn't seem the way Liverpool do things. How difficult it was for them to put this deal together.
Yeah.
So I think for Salah, he wouldn't mind keeping his options open and big signing on FIFA when you leave a club on a free. I kind of think it might suit all parties. Liverpool would be waiving a fee, but ultimately they would also save a lot of wages. So what do you think? Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big things for him to get the contract he got when he was 30 is the fact that there was a trust between the hierarchy and the player himself that he was still capable of doing what he'd done in the previous sort of 3-4 years. I think Salah backed himself to continue being the main man and the top scorer. And I think last year, did he score 30 last season?
Yeah.
Despite a really poor season for Liverpool overall, he's on to 18 now in all competitions. You know, we could feasibly get another 12 or 13 to eclipse what he did last season, and Liverpool are going for all major titles again, and he's still the main man. So I suppose in that way, the faith has been vindicated. Faith from Salah and his own ability for the kickoff, and then the fact that the club and the ownership have trusted him to be able to carry on delivering. So from that perspective, everyone's been proven right. Now, it probably gets a little bit more difficult to continue to perform and continue to convince people that you can perform the older you get, into your 30s. I think he's going to be 32 in June. So by the time next season starts, he's 32 and he's still earning that, well, somewhere between 350 and 400 based on, you know, goal contributions and all that type of stuff. It's a very complex deal by all accounts. But he's the highest paid player of all time at Liverpool. I can't see him getting an improvement on those terms.
No.
But on the flip side, I look at it now and think the top professionals play until 36, 37 now, as opposed to when kind of we were growing up and it was more like 31, 32. So much advancements in sports science and the levels of professionalism have gone up, and no one's more dedicated and professional than Mo Salah. You've only got to look at the nick he's in to know that he's having recovery sessions at 2 a.m. when he's getting back from away games and all that type of stuff, and physios and whatever else, and he keeps himself at the absolute peak, doesn't he? He's never injured and whatever else. So for me, I think if you can continue justifying the contract, then I'd hope to see an extension, to be honest, up until maybe 35, 36, when you might see him start to wane a little bit. And okay, he's not Lionel Messi, but Messi is still, was he 36 now, Messi? 37 in May. And he's still, you know, okay, he's in America, but he's still one of the best players in the world, isn't he? And Salah, maybe not quite at that level in terms of like the best player in the world, but he's still one of the most high profile, best performing players in European football, isn't he? So I just don't want to contemplate a Liverpool without Salah, I suppose.
You're going to have to at some point.
Yeah. But I'm still kicking it down the road, and I hope that he can carry on performing as he has done since he signed that new deal 18 months ago.
Yeah, there does seem to be a bit more harmony between Liverpool and Salah. I think before they signed that deal, you know, I was always watching his agent for what he tweeted. Yeah. Everyone seems a lot happier. He seems a little bit more like he is a bigger part of the squad, if that makes sense, a bigger personality, rather than just being the goal scorer who, I don't know, he just feels like more of a figure at Liverpool. But I just think once you get to, you know, he's going to be 33 by the end of this deal, isn't he? And once you get to that age, it becomes very difficult for player and club to get their expectations aligned in terms of what a deal looks like. So I think it might be one where Liverpool have got a succession plan as well. So all parties might say, well, let's just see out this contract.
Yeah, I mean, James Miller took a considerable pay cut, didn't he, when he signed his one-year contract addition. I'm trying to remember when that was now, but maybe it's a similar thing with Salah. Might he think that the lay of the land elsewhere isn't as great as at Liverpool? And, you know, he's revered, isn't he, as a Liverpool player? Might there be a kind of reduction on terms and carry on when he's 33? I don't know, but I think I do agree with you in terms of it does feel like there's a bit more harmony between the respective parties. He's become a figurehead, hasn't he, now, rather than just the main goal scorer. You know, they moved on Mane, they moved on Firmino, but Salah is still there, kind of leading the way with the new gunslingers. You know, Darwin Nunes, Luis Diaz, Cody Gakpo, and to a lesser extent Jota, and Mo is still the main man.
Yeah, well, we will see, but I certainly think that something big is going to happen with Salah over the next 12 months. I also think that FSG will announce plans to buy a new club.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
We know that Dave Powell, our business football reporter, has long been reporting that they fancy buying a basketball club, perhaps a new franchise in Las Vegas. And I think it's the sort of thing that I think will cause a lot of controversy among fans, because Red Sox fans think they don't spend as much on Red Sox as they do in Liverpool, vice versa. FSG aren't the type of owners who spend. So when their focus is sort of took elsewhere, then you could see a little bit of that. But they're very quiet, Liverpool, FSG, since they decided to keep Liverpool and they got that extra investment. I don't think we're necessarily going to hear big things from them around Liverpool, but perhaps elsewhere. What do you think?
Yeah, and maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing, is it? No. You know, certainly if the team's performing and they're doing well on the pitch and they are bringing in the right players at the right time, I see no reason why.
Anfield's redeveloped.
Yeah. I mean, we're less than a month into that, aren't we? So I don't see why there has to be any big, you know, upheaval behind the scenes or even stuff that we're aware of. It's an interesting one, is it? Because we were looking at it maybe a little bit further back than a year ago, and maybe sort of 13, 14 months ago, and you're looking at it and there was talk of them wanting to sell, and it really looked like what is going on behind the scenes, because you've got the sporting director wanting to up sticks, the head of data, Ian Graham. He was announced his resignation. There was talk of selling the club, and there was loads of rumours from various parties interested and whatever else. And you were thinking, well, what's going on here? You know, there's so much instability and so many questions. And now those questions have gone away, haven't they? We know that FSG are planning for the long term.
Yeah.
Klopp is building a new team. It's all going well on the pitch, and there's loads to be excited about. So I think for this year, the FSG stuff will keep Dave Powell busy, of course, but I don't think there's going to be too much to keep fans interested, really.
It could be kind of the quietest year at Liverpool couldn't it?
And that's no bad thing, really.
All right, well, we'll just sum up our top five and then we'll carry on. Trent, new contract. A trophy in Liverpool's cabinet, a big day out in Dublin for the Europa League final. Mohamed Salah announcing, I said departure, I think we decide on future, and FSG announcing plans to buy a new franchise, as they say. So the next one, I think we both agree on this, Liverpool to spend big on a defender or midfielder or both.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing for me, I think I mentioned it a few times now, but when they went in for Caicedo in August and they blew everyone out the water, but £111 million bid, wasn't it? I was on paternity leave at the time, but I remember seeing the tweet from David Ornstein. I think it was on a night feed and I'd just seen it at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I had to check that it wasn't a parody. So three times, right? Is that definitely David Ornstein's account? And it was, and it was true. And Liverpool were going big time for Brighton's defensive midfielder. And it all sort of fell away or crumbled or whatever within the space of about 2 or 3 days, and Liverpool signed Otaro Endo instead for 16 million. So that money there, technically, is still sort of resting in the account, isn't it, as Father Ted would say. So what are Liverpool going to do now? Because it's the money's still there.
Yeah.
You'd think that they're starting to think that we might have the Champions League money back on the agenda from July onwards or whenever that comes into the accounts.
Yeah.
Liverpool are able to significantly add to their squad.
Yeah.
Now, it's just a case of where that money's going to be spread and how it's going to be diverted, really.
Can I throw a few names? We're getting lots of names in the comments. Lacroix. Keep getting him. Florentino Luiz. Yeah. He's a midfielder, isn't he? Inacio, the Sporting centre-back. There's another guy, Silva, isn't there? Benfica centre-back.
Silva, yeah.
And who's the other guy we were discussing before?
Diamandi. Yeah, I think it was Lewis Steele, Daily Mail. I think he linked Liverpool with them. We are checking out.
They all make sense, though, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can discount too many, really, in terms of think Liverpool are watching him, because they watch loads, in all honesty. And it's never, or quite often, it's not with a view to we're watching him because we really like him, we want to bring him in. It's more just watching so many players, and they don't really discount.
They don't
definitively say he's not for us until they get to like a certain age where improvements are only going to be incremental. So that's sort of 25 and upwards.
Just to touch on that, because someone's asked about Bowen, Sané, Rafinha and Elise. I certainly think Bowen and Sané, I would imagine they're the ones that you can sort of cross off the list.
Sané certainly. Yeah,
Bowen's 28 and Klopp loves Bowen, doesn't he? But 28th, do you think that they would spend? He'd cost a lot of money.
No, not now. I think he might have maybe missed the boat. Liverpool were certainly keen on the 3 years coming out. And this year's gone on to kind of prove himself as one of the best around, hasn't he, really?
Jared Bowen, he's a great player.
He's a fair player. Yeah. But I think might have just passed him by now. You look at who Liverpool have signed in the last few years. They signed Konate when he was 22. Nunes when he was 22. Diaz was a little bit older, I think 25. He just turned 25 that month. It's generally between the 22 and 25 mark, isn't it? Diogo Jota was similar.
Michael Olise, I think, kind of, to me, is one that kind of makes sense if they were buying there, because of his age and he's playing in the Premier League. But I think he's one that Liverpool would want to watch for maybe another year to make sure that they think he's up to the standard.
I read something recently about the existence of a buyout clause.
Well,
he signed a new contract, didn't he? Like he was going to go to Chelsea in the summer, and then he signed a new contract. It was all quite sudden and surprising. I wouldn't be surprised if there is an existence of a release clause in those terms with Elise thinking, well, at some point, I might look to move here. And we know the Premium and Premier League clubs aren't really under pressure to sell. So buyout clauses tend to be the way things work now. So, yeah, I do like him, though. I thought particularly against, I think he played against, who was it, a couple of weeks ago, Wolves, was it? He had a great game. I think he'd just come back from injury. But, certainly he's a player who I'd be looking at. One for further down the line.
You'd probably think midfield defender is the priority for the time being.
It's the matter of injury, hasn't it, which is kind of... brought a few more question marks. He's suffered an ACL. He's going to be 33 in August, I think. He's out of contract.
Don't ruin our next one. it makes sense. And in terms of this month, do you think it would just be like a Gakpo situation, a Diaz situation, where someone that they were thinking might work in the summer, they realise actually we can get in ahead and get them done?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I think I've said that on the last few pods now. I just feel like it has opened up for Liverpool, and if they can be a little bit aggressive and proactive in the transfer window, it could just be the one or two players who have come in and just tilt everything in their favour for Europa League or maybe even Premier League. We'll see. I don't think Liverpool need to be bringing in stopgap short-term options at the moment. But if there is something available, let's see what they can do. Because we know the money's there, don't we? But there are external factors which sometimes come into play, i.e. Luis Diaz, when they didn't really plan on bringing him in before Tottenham make their move.
Yeah. Keep sending your questions in. Quick one from Kai Delaney is watching. Hi, Kai. Kai used to run our Blood Red podcast a while back, and we miss him. He's a good guy. But yeah, he asked when we can see Thiago back in a red shirt. I mean, we're talking about things will definitely happen in 2024, oh, yeah. So I don't know about that. But you didn't you think that he might have been on the bench the weekend?
No, Doyle said to me in Arsenal, he's heard the rumour that Thiago might be on the bench, but obviously that didn't transpire. Don't know where that one came from.
Yeah,
I mean...
Oh, sorry, Kyle also says, PS, tell Paul I miss him.
Oh, I miss him too, yeah. Caught up with him just before Christmas, good guy. Yeah, I mean, the annoying thing for Thiago is Liverpool brought forward the surgery so he'd be fit for the start of the season, and now they played 20 games in the Premier League and he hasn't kicked the ball. Yeah. We haven't even seen him in training, have we, with the training kit on? That, for me, is the big worry. He's one of Liverpool's biggest earners. He hasn't played all season. Is he going to... You know, is he even a factor at this point for this season?
Yeah,
I hope so. I hope that he can possibly get himself fit and play some sort of part, but... His last start was in February of last year, so he hasn't played. He hasn't started a game for 11 months.
Yeah.
His last game at all was in April.
Yeah.
So it's just looking increasingly likely that he's just going to become a big part player for the season, which is a massive shame, because I thought with the midfield restructuring, they didn't have to rely on him too much, and he could have just been dropped in here or there and just, you know, with his cameos. And I still think he's Liverpool's best midfielder when he's fit and ready, but... That is a massive caveat, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very sad, because I do think he'd have played a fairly big part of the season. You know, I think he's, I think you look at the way the midfield shaped up. And obviously on his day, he's such a good player. You keep thinking back to that United game when he ran the show in the 4-0.
Just at that time, really, those sort of like 3 months or so during the end of that season. Klopp said, I think it was in November, that we expect him to be out until the new year. I think he was just sort of kicking it down the road there, so we stopped getting asked about it. But now it is the new year, he might start getting quizzed on it a little bit more. So hopefully we'll have some sort of update in the coming days.
Yeah, we'll rattle through some of the next ones. A shake-up in defence. I mean, you've just mentioned it. Yeah, a big shake-up in defence this summer. Van Dijk, new deal potentially. Maybe a one-year one for him. He's got, 2 years left to run as well? Or 18 months, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, he's the captain, isn't he? He was made the captain 6 months ago. So obviously that's with a view to it being a long-term thing. I don't think you kind of name a new captain for a year, do you, or 18 months. So, yeah, it's going to be his birthday's in June, so it'll be 33 in June, I think. That, you know, is kind of worrying territory.
Van Dijk seems more to one, rather than like Salah, who I think will fancy himself to... Fair play and big money until his late 30s. I think Van Dijk seems to be one that will sort of accept a little bit of scaling down as time goes on. Do you think that's fair? Or
maybe, yeah.
In the way that James Milner or someone like that would have done.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Thiago Silva now, he's still performing for Chelsea, isn't he, 38 or whatever, and Van Dijk is not necessarily someone who... You know, he does have those qualities, but he doesn't massively rely on his physical attributes.
Yeah.
So even if he does become a little yard slower or whatever else, he's still kind of a thinking man's defender, isn't he? And very good on the ball, particularly with those raking diagonal passes. So
absolutely.
I don't think he's going to fall off a cliff in terms of his contributions or his output. And I think... He's been absolutely superb this season, hasn't he? Yeah. One of the best defenders in the Premier League, if not the best centre half for the team who has got the best defensive record. So, it'd be a shame to discard him too quickly. Yeah.
But Quanta development and a massive goodbye is probably more likely as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's sad what has happened to Joel Matip. And Klopp was keen to talk up the prospect of a new contract, but he doesn't always have the last say on this type of stuff, does he? So. Maybe Matip has played his last game. Such a sad end to his Liverpool career if it is. You know, just kind of hobbling off in a game against Fulham. Wasn't even on the telly, was it?
Playing really well.
Yeah, he's having a really good season. But never been too durable. 33, out of contract. Or he will be 33.
And we know they're looking at new centre-halves as well. So
exactly,
With Van Dijk, Konate, and then Kwanzaa's development.
Yeah, I think Kwanzaa's development has been the kind of feel-good story of the season, hasn't it? It's come from nowhere, really. I think even Klopp's been surprised by it. But every time you see him play, he doesn't tend to put a foot wrong. Looks remarkably composed for someone who's only 20. And I think if there was someone who was 20 years of age playing like that in the Premier League elsewhere,
yeah,
I think you'd start seeing why aren't Liverpool looking at him? You know, Levi Colwill is a perfect example. They were very high on him. But Kwanzaa has been flawless this season when he's played.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, we'll move on quickly to number seven, which is Liverpool return to America. It's almost like a sure thing, isn't it, in the summer this year?
You'd think so, yeah. I mean, the last two summers they've been to Thailand, Singapore, Far East, yeah. I know that they turned down the chance to be in that kind of Vegas tournament over the summer that Manchester United were involved in. I think Chelsea were there as well. And it's been, how many years now since they went to America? Is it 2019?
Is it as long as that, yeah? I suppose with COVID and stuff.
So I think this might be viewed as a great opportunity to get out there and further the fan base in America. Obviously, owners based there, aren't they? And whatever else. So, yeah, I think, I mean, we normally start hearing about this types of stuff in around about March time. Yeah. I think that German training camp might be back on the agenda.
Yeah,
I don't know whether that's going to be before or after the commercial leg of the summer activities, but I'd imagine it will be America this summer.
Yeah. Next one, number nine. Ian Doyle made quite a big prediction on this pod yesterday. You were on the pod.
Oh, yesterday, sorry.
Bobby Clark.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
Becoming a, he said that by the end of the year, he would expect Bobby Clark to be not a fixture in Liverpool's first team, but someone in and around there playing games. I think I kind of trust Doyle to have that. He doesn't often say big positive things unless he means it, does he? So him, Conor Bradley as well, Kay Gordon, Ben Doak, some big developments on their part, do you think?
Yeah, Clark was saying in Brussels a few weeks ago that, you know, specifically Gordon and Doak, you know, these are our boys and we don't want to loan them out just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Particularly Gordon, who's had an absolute torrid sort of 2 years with injuries, hasn't he? He's only recently just come back, so don't know if there'll be any rush to throw him out to the Wolves of lower league football where you're getting kicked by grizzled veterans who've been around the block and whatever else. So, yeah, I just think some more quiet, considerable development from all those players this calendar year it will be great. You know, I thought Gordon looked good against the USG. He takes the ball and half-turn lovely, doesn't he? And I think he's just kind of got fouled a little bit too much whenever he got the ball. Doak, we want to see a little bit more from him in terms of the final pass, the little ball to the back post or whatever it is, because he gets around his fullbacks superbly when he has the ball. Conor Bradley, I seen Carl Frampton, the Northern Irish boxer, the other day, saying he could be the biggest Northern Irish football prospect since George Best, which was quite the praise. Had he not had that back injury, I'm sure we would have seen him a lot more as well.
Yeah.
And Bobby Clark, it's loads of competition now in Liverpool's midfield, but he's a classy little operator, and looking forward to seeing him go from strength to strength. But I suppose the good thing is there's no major pressure on any of them to become big major Liverpool stars in the next year. It's just a case of giving them game time and seeing how they develop in the same way the likes of Trent and Curtis Jones have done.
Definitely. Okay, final one. Rivals implode. And I'll put a little asterisk on the top of this because I don't think Man City are going to implode because they never do. They just will spend again. But the others, I think there's a huge chance. I don't think Erik ten Hag will be Man United manager by the end of the year. I think that is only trending one way. Chelsea are just a mess that I cannot see sorting themselves out anytime soon. Surely they can't keep spending money. And Pochettino, I don't know whether we'll get the backing long term. And then Arsenal, I think Arsenal may, and I really like Arsenal, I think they're a good team, I think they've built a good team there, but I think they may have shot their load a little bit, sorry for the phrase, but I look at the way that they've spent a lot of money, Arsenal, and we know now that FFP is starting to bite a little bit in terms of they can't keep spending at such a level, and it's taken them to somewhere, and I don't necessarily think we're going to see them kick on any further. I kind of think they've hit their level.
That's the ceiling, though.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I really like Declan Rice. I think Gabriel and Saliba, of course. Saliba, I think, great players. I think they made a mess of their goalkeeping situation. And then I like Saka a lot, but him and Martinelli, really good players, but don't score a great deal of goals. Vase of Flowers saying skies are certainly darkening over Castle Grayskull. I haven't had anyone call Trafford Castle Grayskull in a while. I like that. And yeah, I think he is. I think Ten Hag is living on borrowed time. But yeah, I just don't know where Arsenal go next. Yeah. I don't know whether they've got the money to spend big.
Well, that's it, isn't it? They've spent an awful lot bringing Zinchenko and Jesus and Rice and David Raya, sure, the other players in there as well that they've spent on. And now the doesn't seem like they've got the money to bring in the centre forward that they desperately need. I agree with you on Saka Martinelli. I think Saka's played a stupid amount of minutes, hasn't he?
Yeah.
For the last sort of 2 years. Even 3 years, maybe. He looks like he needs a bit of a rest. Yeah. You know, Arsenal just hit a bit of patchy form. Is it 1-8 now? 1-7?
Yeah.
If they have another poor month, they could be well out of any sort of title race. Yeah. United are just United. You know, I think me and Doyle were having a bit of a debate yesterday in the office, and he was trying to tell me that.
Oh yeah,
players, top class, and I just wasn't having it.
I don't, like you said, I think you can count on the fingers of one hand how many top class players they've got, and they haven't bought well. They don't seem a club in harmony. I don't really necessarily think that this investment's going to make a huge amount of difference into the way they run. And you know, they've tried every different type. They do remind me of Liverpool in the sort of 90s and noughties a bit, you know, trying different types of manager, different types of football, putting lots of trust in the manager, putting less trust in the manager, trying different types of players. And they always have one or two players that stand out, like Bruno Fernandes, whether you like him or not. You know, the United fans love him and he does score goals and create things. But it doesn't necessarily take them onto that next level, whereas Liverpool have become a unit like United were in the 90s, where they could swap players but carry on at the same level. And I just can't, I can't see Ten Hag having a happy ending there. I mean, what did he say yesterday, that they're still in two competitions?
Yeah.
The Premier League to compete for? I mean,
yesterday against Wigan, and okay, it's the third round of the FA Cup and Monday night away from home, and you're just trying to get through it. But that was an opportunity for them to play well. They never play well. Every time I see them, they don't play well. The games that they win, they kind of scrape by, they do enough, they play in little 2-5 minute bursts and it gets them over the line. Or they're comprehensively outplayed, they get beat. And the recruitment's been awful. You know, the amount of money they've spent on that right side, Jadon Sancho and then Antony.
Yeah.
What is it, 160 million, something like that, for both of them?
The Sancho situation is a crazy, crazy thing. I mean, to allow that to happen, I still think that if Liverpool had needed him at the time and he'd gone to Liverpool, we'd be talking about a really, really good player.
Yeah, yeah.
But United have just mismanaged him, and you know, and you look at that, and to spend that money on Antony. So yeah, I mean, in terms of what that means for Liverpool, I always thought going into the season that Liverpool were the City's best rivals, and I think over the course of the last 6 months that has only strengthened my confidence in that, and I don't think much will change over the next 12 months, but maybe United, Arsenal, Chelsea fans will pull this video out and laugh at us. But
I haven't spoke really about Chelsea too much, but what's going on there is just the craziest project in football, isn't it?
I love how their manager, you know, you see Pochettino in press conferences, he says, we need to see what we can do in the market.
Yeah.
Every time I think, why is his bosses not saying, no, go and coach? Klopp gets a lot of stick for, I like training over transfers, but sometimes, you know, Chelsea do need to do some training. They need to coach, get Nicholas Jackson
back. They've just got Nkunku back, haven't they? Hopefully, the hope will be that he can start doing a bit and show what he's been... what they've missed, really. But they've signed that many players, there doesn't seem to be any real strategy and plan. And I think they've been really poor now for 18 months, 2 years.
Yeah.
Chelsea. And that's a long time for such a big club, especially when you spend that kind of money.
And they're not just sort of United missing out on the top four, perhaps poor. They're like 9th, 10th poor.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really, really bad, isn't it? And yeah, again, FFP, you know, we've seen Everton get in trouble. Manchester City obviously have the charges hanging over them, whether anything will ever come of that. But, you know, Chelsea can't spend the way that they can. Arsenal obviously feeling the squeeze of FFP. Whereas the way Liverpool do things, whether you like it or not, it kind of gives them the breathing room, doesn't it, to carry on improving. So, yeah, we shall see. We'll leave it there because you've got to get to Kirby.
Yes.
So, go and see Pap Linders. But thank you all so much for tuning in. Thanks for your questions. Thanks for your support. Give us a like, subscribe to us on YouTube. We're going to try and do a few different things in 2024. So tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like, tell us what you want more of and what you want less of. We appreciate your support and thanks for tuning in. We'll be back on Thursday for the regular Blood Red.
Debrief, yeah.
Yeah, for a bit of filler full and chat and League Cup chat. But thanks very much. I'll see you then. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.